It's time for Twink This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here for our first show of the new year. Matthew Ingram from Fortune as well. We'll talk about, oh, we get heavy again. We get deep. We talk about disruption, how the world is changing, why it's the end of mass media, and, wow, those are some really cool things you can get at CES. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 386, recorded Wednesday, January 4th, 2017. You got something jammed in there good. This Week in Google is brought to you by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. For more information, visit Betterment.com. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the first show of 2017! Woohoo! Joining us at the Twig table, not Stacey Higginbotham. She's skying her way to Las Vegas for the big Consumer Electronics Show. And we'll have lots of IoT news next week on Twig. But Jeff Jarvis is here. In fact, this is it's the old guys edition because we're the guys senior enough not to have to go to CES.
Yeah, we you know, it's our old lady shoes just don't make walking that far work anymore.
Jeff blogs at buzzmachine.com, professes journalism at the City University of New York in Manhattan, and has written many a great book, including What Would Google Do? Public Parts, Gutenberg the Geek, and Geek Sparing Gifts. Also with us from Fortune, Matthew Ingram, Stacey's erstwhile collaborator at GigaOM, now at Fortune.com. I guess you were there briefly with her, too.
Yes.
He's up in the America
Frozen
North.
Frozen North.
America North, we call it, a.k.a. Canada. Hello, you guys.
Kanuckistan.
Kanuckistan. Did you have a lovely holiday break?
It was great. Yeah. I'm currently working on losing all the pounds I gained.
Yeah, me too. Did it snow? Did you get a white Christmas?
We did. Nice. Actually, we were up even further north at a friend's farm, and there was probably a foot and a half of fresh snow. It was it was beautiful.
No snow for New York, right, Jeff?
No, and then I went to Florida to see my folks.
Definitely no snow there.
No.
I foolishly for the week after Christmas went to Rhode Island, Providence.
Yeah, how was it?
Fortunately, my mom's there, so that made it worthwhile. It was great to see her and my sister. But there's no neither snow nor heat nor warmth. So
no palm trees.
No, I was thinking you took a poor child into the cold.
I did. Michael went with us. He kicking and screaming. He's 14. Never had been to New England. Said, what am I going to see? What's there? Fortunately, the hotel was connected via tunnel to a Buster and Dave and Buster's.
Nice.
So it all worked out.
Perfect.
Yeah, all worked out very nicely. We went up to Boston for a day. I love Boston. It's always fun to go to Boston.
And,
we visited the Boston Common, the frozen tundra, the squirrels just as aggressive as ever, the public garden. Fenoil Hall. How do you pronounce that? Fenoil? Faneuil? Faneuil? I should ask a Bostonian.
Good question.
Yeah. Spelled F-A-N-E-I-U-L or something like that.
It's probably funnel.
It's probably pronounced Capac. Capac Hall. Saw the Old North Church and went to the Boston Museum of Science, which is still the best science museum in the world.
Mm. Oh, I haven't been there.
It's the original, and it really is awfully good.
I ran around Harvard trying to figure out which room was Mark Zuckerberg's.
Ah, that's fun.
Oh.
Hey, what did Mark Zuckerberg do for Christmas?
He found
probably
God.
Learned a new language or something.
Yeah.
Or...
He did. He found God. He's no longer an atheist.
Yeah. But he was kind of coy about what exactly he believed.
Well, I don't know, did he actually find God or did he switch to, switch from it's complicated to agnostic, you know?
I think he suggested he believes there's some sort of higher power
Happy Christmas and Happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas from Priscilla, Mark, Beast, his dog, and me. To which one user replied, that was his Facebook post, "Aren't you an atheist?" "No," Zuckerberg responded. "I was raised Jewish. And then I went through a period when I questioned things, but now I believe..." Oh, boy, this is fudge words. "Religion is very important."
Yeah.
"I don't think that's what they mean, Mark, when they say, 'I believe.' I believe religion is very important."
So he believes in all religions, I guess.
That's my religion. I went back to visit the church that I went to as a child, the First Unitarian Church of Providence, Rhode Island, where I was taught
yours is,
worship you guys the God of your choice. Yes.
Yeah. It's not even a church, really. It's more of a club.
It's a club. And mostly Jewish, actually, which is very weird.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah, you can actually be Jewish and believe in other sort of faith-based things.
Yeah, fair enough. Mark, that's what Mark means. He also announced that his project for 2017 is to talk to people in every state, all 50 states.
Yeah.
How is he, has he got a plan for that? How is he going to do that? Is he going to do town halls?
He's going to travel by blimp, I think.
No, by drone.
Just touch down.
What's the name of their drone?
Aquila.
Aquila. I can drop them there, yeah.
Or Aquila, if depending on your...
So do you buy... So this leads to speculation that he's going to run for president. Do you buy that?
Yes. Yeah. That's why I understand the speculation, and I think he's going from denying that he's a media platform to saying, "Yeah, actually, I want to run for president."
Well, and he did the whole structure of the what came out in that lawsuit over the share restructuring was that he specifically wanted to leave the door open to potentially running for office or getting
you're kidding.
Involved.
In that government. Was given as a reason?
If he goes to work for government, yes, he can
goes to work for government.
There's a clause that allows him to retain ownership even if he goes to, and I think Mark Andreessen was saying that's not going to fly with the board.
The board? What? What about the emoluments clause of the Constitution? Forget the board. Oh, wait a minute. That's out the window. That's out the window. I'm sorry. I forgot. Actually, it makes sense because I think you can make a very strong case that that President-elect Trump won the election by being very adept in his use of Facebook and Twitter.
More Twitter.
Twitter. Okay. So I've been thinking about this. Twitter for sure, because it allows him to speak directly to the people, much like those rallies where he's unintermediated by media, which of course is the goal of every politician. Get the media out of this interpreting what I'm saying. I want to talk to the people directly. FDR started it with fireside chats, right? As soon as there was mass media, presidents and politicians have tried to go direct to the electorate.
Radio.
Can't say that's a bad thing. And he's used Twitter really to great effect that way. But I'm saying that it was the strategy, and probably really the strategy of his son-in-law, Kushner,
Jared
Kushner, mm-hmm. To use Facebook very efficiently and very effectively to both...
Well, in terms of the advertising, yes.
Yes, to both target...
Well, not just that targeting... Yeah,
and suppress, because bought ads that would encourage people who would vote for Trump to vote for Trump, but they also, we understand, bought ads to encourage others to sit by the wayside. Don't vote. And
that was smart.
Very smart. And they used Cambridge Analytica to target super precisely. Yeah. I was talking to an old friend in radio this morning, and he said, "Leo, I'm glad both of us are at the end of our careers because, frankly, mainstream media cannot compete." And this is, by the way, why you're seeing such huge profits for Google and Facebook. Mainstream media cannot compete in the ads it offers with these highly targeted, really powerful medium of the internet, of particularly Facebook and Google.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's true.
I just wrote about it today. Their control over, 85-90% at least of the growth in digital advertising went to those two companies. So that leaves...
Because they offer better 3%. Services. They offer more effectiveness. Yeah. They offer more value. Did you see big half news from Medium? It looks like Ev is basically giving up on advertising.
It sounds that way.
Why?
Down at the bottom
and
of
letting
other,
go a third of its
staff. Ev's announcement.
He's saying we're not going to do advertising. What are we? He's pivoting.
A third of the staff. So everything to do with advertising, it sounds like, is gone. And he's going to try and compensate writers and publishers based on value.
50 jobs, mostly in sales, support, and other business functions.
He's closing New York. He's closing Washington.
And Washington.
And he's saying that advertising is responsible for various ills in society.
And it doesn't work.
It's not working in media. We need a new model. But then he doesn't say what the model. So keep on going down. We're building this new model, blah, 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 blah. Further reflection, blah, 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 blah. We decided to need a different, bolder approach, blah, 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 blah. It's too soon to say exactly what this will look like. This strategy is more focused but less proven. It will require time to get it right, as well as some different skills. That's all he says.
Yeah, and he says that, so in the paragraph above that, it says writers and creators should be rewarded based on the value they're creating. But it's not clear how that value is going to be measured. Is it going to be measured on time spent?
Does he pay in psychic dollars in heaven? in frequent flyer miles?
Yeah, because if you're not monetizing, well, this sounds more like a philosophical decision on Ev's part than a business decision.
Because
the moral you could take away from you, and this is your article, Matt, in Fortune, how Google and Facebook have taken over the digital ad industry, which is clearly the case. The moral you could take away from that, if you're Ev, is, well, that's where I need to go, because I could gather that same information about my readers and offer the same kind of granular advertising that Facebook is. So he's decided, from a purely philosophical point of view, he doesn't want to go down that road.
Well, and I think he made it clear it's not working. That's the sense.
Well, he hasn't gone all in enough. Yeah, it's not working.
Well, they tried. They've tried a number. They've tried native. They've tried sponsored content. They've tried. They did a deal with BMW for a vertical. Vertical.
That's all wrong. because that's not what Facebook does.
It's not.
It's all old school. Even native, which feels like the new thing is all old school mass advertising.
Right. Right.
And where Facebook and Google are winning, and I would guess this is what you talk about in your article, where is by highly targeted advertising.
Yeah. They understand their users in a way that most media companies do not and probably never will.
And there's a corollary. And
especially at scale.
There's a corollary to that, because the advertisers and the businesses who are going to succeed are the people who understand that. This is what I was talking about this morning. Right. I was talking with Bill Handel, who's the morning host at KFI. Is that you can't compete. I mean, I guess Coca-Cola and Procter & Gamble will still spend ad dollars on branding. What do you think?
Sure. Sure they will. I mean, yeah, I think will. Those but types of
be,
advertising...
Wouldn't your ad dollars be more efficient, even for branding ads, where all you're trying to do is get the brand name out there, if you did it in a more targeted way? Look at the kinds of things Trump did, for instance, using Cambridge Analytica, and I've mentioned this before, is it wasn't merely, oh, let's see who's going to vote for Trump based on gun control and do a pro-gun ad. It wasn't even that broad a brush. It was, we're going to do an ad that says Trump favors the Second Amendment. But what we're going to do is those ads will be further tailored depending on the target audience. So if you believe that you need guns because you fear government or crime, you would have an ad that highlights crime or an ad that highlights government. Right. If you want to have guns because you're a hunter, you'd have an... So you target, if you even to emotion, if you're a happy-go-lucky type, you have an ad that targets a hunter who's happy-go-lucky, and then a different ad that targets a hunter who's depressed. And that kind of granularity, even for Coca-Cola, I would think would be more efficient.
Although it's interesting that not that long ago, Procter & Gamble said that it sort of couched it in vague terms, but it sounded like they were not as enthusiastic about the sort of targeted approach for all things. Not that they were shrinking their Facebook budget, but that it was probably not going to grow by as much as they had said earlier.
A number of brands abandoned Facebook, didn't they?
And in effect, they said, targeting works for certain things, but we do lots of other things that targeting doesn't work. So it could be that their own business is evolving and they have to figure out how to.
Wrong.
Or they think branding.
I think so. I think well, they, like media, are addicted to something from the past.
Right.
The bottom line, Leo, what the internet killed is mass media's business model and thus mass media.
Precisely.
Right.
And it affects us not just on the ad side. It affects us in our product side and what we are. We're still putting out mass products.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not, and look at the election, not just in Cambridge Analytica, but look at it in terms of memes and things that people passed around. We just can't get our heads around thinking that way in media. And it's insolvable if we still stick to the ways we used to do things. But it's even more than this. I want to bounce this off you guys. So I've been thinking, partly out of the fake news brouhaha, but I've been thinking too about this idea that all of journalism's tools are reductive. Right, we reduce complexity to a simple narrative with a story arc. We reduce things to a opinion poll where the pollster chooses the agenda, to a data visualization, to fact checking. In fact, of course, the world is far more complex than that. And Google and Facebook and this whole fake news thing are being shoved into media's metaphors. You know, you have to do fact checking, and you have to get rid of fake news, and you have to do this and you do that. And Google and Facebook, for their part, say, oh, we just reflect the world. We don't make it, right? When you type in Jews are in the search bar and it comes up with awful stuff, that's because there's awful people out there doing stuff. And sorry, that's not our fault. They can't say that anymore because it's the world is being warped to exploit them, right? It's always happened to us in media with PR, but it's being warped to exploit the algorithms of Google and Facebook. So my argument is, finally, that Google and Facebook have to have the capability to draw far more complex maps of the world and controversies and understanding where things are going on and where they are. I'll bet the alt-right fight that got Trump elected was actually started with maybe 100 people. It's probably very small. And it got reflected and amplified by media and then by social media and then by purchase of things that you just talked about. And I think that what we have to do in both media and the platforms is be able to reflect and understand and analyze through new tools, through artificial intelligence and learning systems, a far more complex picture than we ever could do in the past. So it goes to advertising, everything you've just said, that also plays back to the content itself. Why should I read the same newspaper you read? We're different people. You didn't like La La Land. Screw you.
Do we have that capability at this point of
customizing? Well, I also wonder whether there were some social benefits, you could argue, to mass media.
Huge
there were
social benefits was, to have a common right, conversation.
Right, common conversations, shared experience, et cetera, et cetera. Well, but what happens when everyone's having their own conversation
we had
in
it,
a narrow
Matthew,
group?
We had it before television killed the third and
no,
fourth
I know
and
we did.
Newspapers in towns, right?
I know we did.
We
but,
had that
but we're
role
talking
and,
about,
and it worked. We got there.
But we're talking about expanding that by orders of magnitude. We're talking about having micro conversations about micro issues with everyone else who already agrees with them.
Where it gets scary to me is tribalism.
And we've seen that. That's exactly what happened during the election.
Tribes can be good and bad. Sebastian Junger has a book called Tribes Out, in which he argues that there are benefits to tribes. And he goes back to the beginning of America.
Goes back to the beginning of human beings.
Exactly.
Right.
Evolutionary. There's an evolutionary benefit to tribalism. Absolutely.
Exactly. If you're in the right tribe, there's a benefit.
Well, yes, but if you're competing, if all tribes are competing.
Settlers, white people, settlers from Europe were taken prisoner by Native American tribes and then so-called rescued back, and they couldn't stand it. They went back to the tribes.
Yeah.
Tribalism done well is a powerful force for good. Tribalism done badly is a mob.
It's an evolutionary force.
The problem is you get the good and the bad.
Yeah.
So we saw tribes. We saw tribes voting.
Go ahead.
We saw tribes voting for Trump based on lies, based on things he said that simply weren't true. That's a problem, I think. And if they're being served by media and by technology that confirms their assumptions, even if they're based on inaccuracies or things that just simply aren't true, then how does that benefit anyone? Then
that's media's fault. We're not doing a good job.
It's Facebook's fault.
I argue constantly that we in liberal media, and I'm liberal and I'm media, abandoned the right half of America. Ever since Watergate, conservatives have not trusted media, and we have not served them, and we left a vacuum that was filled in by the likes of Fox News and Breitbart. And before you go tweeting and emailing me, I'm being sympathetic and empathetic to saying that, yes, liberal media has ill-served conservative America, and that's why we're in this boat.
I think we should be investing
in conservative media.
I've evolved a little bit past this narrative because I think that the narrative, while true, it doesn't grasp the real shift that's happening. Go ahead, Matthew, and I'll talk about what I'm
saying. No, you go ahead.
So I've been rereading Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, which is really a great book to read, if only because it's a knock in the head. It's like when you look at the map of the world and you turn it upside down and say there isn't really an up and down. As you know, it's just Eurocentric that we see us in the middle in Australia. It could be, the other way around because it's a globe. So his book is very much like that. It kind of reassesses American history in the light of a kind of a more Marxist, frankly, point of view. And which is a way that I've started to be thinking about what's been happening in our society, not just in the U.S., but globally in the last few years. And so I guess what I'm thinking is, and what his kind of thesis is, that the coalitions, these kind of common conversations that we talked about, these coalitions are really themselves phony. They're created for a variety of reasons. He says the founding fathers, for instance, were basically landholders. They were wealthy. George Washington was the wealthiest man in the country, who decided that it was that their real threat to them was Indians, slaves, and indentured white servants. A revolt by them would have overpowered them. They wanted to consolidate their control, and the best way to control it was to create patriotism. And to find a new enemy, a common enemy, Britain, and distract them, because there were a number of revolts, popular revolts, prior to the Revolution that really threatened these landholders, and which is a very interesting recontextualization. I'm not saying it's true or false, but it's an interesting recontextualization. And in that light, what we kind of honor as this, national conversation and our vision of what what democracy, I won't just say America, you're from Canada, it's the same vision, this kind of liberal vision, is really an historic. It really isn't a common point.
Do you believe in the nation? Is the nation a necessary institution?
His point is the nation was a creation of an upper class. The middle class itself was a creation of an upper class. The notion that you could rise to the upper class was a creation to preserve civilization so that they could continue to amass fortunes. And in that light, and if you think about it in that light, that's you're holding up in a book, the institutional revolution.
I'll talk about that in a second.
Well, the best way to bring your tribe together is to find an enemy to attack.
A common enemy.
Which is exactly what happened in this election. Yes.
And if one is in a tribe, one might want to consider whether that common enemy is who's benefiting from that.
Right. And it also, I think we've seen abundant evidence that in those types of situations where the tribe is united against a common enemy with a vision of whatever their good might be, truth takes a back seat. It literally does not matter. And unfortunately, we have engines like Facebook that are machines for confirmation bias that effectively encourage you to share things that fit your worldview, regardless of whether they're true.
That they're trying to adapt that.
That's not Facebook's fault. I'm not saying they're doing it.
I think Facebook's reflecting it's a society.
And the problem with lies is the liars. And we're concentrating on the wrong end of this. We're concentrating on Facebook. So the reason I held up the Institutional Revolution is an academic book, but it's really influential in my thinking because it's an economic analysis of obsolete institutions like dueling and the aristocracy and other things. And what he argued was that there were institutions that were established to guarantee trust, because there weren't measurements necessary to be able to measure performance. I won't go through the whole description, but you had the aristocracy because that was the way the king guaranteed that you were one of his people, and because you couldn't communicate with him and you couldn't measure his performance, and you didn't know where the admiral was on the ship because you couldn't measure the latitude and longitude and so on, right? So that's his argument. And he says when those measurements came along, they replaced those institutions. The institutions became obsolete. I think we have new measurements. That is to say, we move past measurement in society now, where you can listen to people. You can speak. You can listen. You can find other people. You can act together. You can form new tribes together, yes, and act as these tribes, yes, in ways that you could not do before. Before, you were stuck in the tribe you were born in.
Yes.
Now you can form tribes wherever. And those tribes can be for good or bad.
Tribe used to be geography.
They don't have to be geography at all.
It used to be geography. And it's not anymore.
It used to be geography. But now what it also means is the institutions that rest a higher order of society, whether that's media and journalism or government and politics, education, they have to readjust themselves. They become obsolete now because we're based on old opinion polls that said we're all red or we're all blue. No. We're far more complex than that. And if you're Cambridge Analytica, you're coming along and you are going to every tribe you can imagine and you're exploiting that. Meanwhile, the counterbalance to that, which would be journalism and media or responsible political parties or government, they're a century behind. This is classic Twig going off absolutely nowhere near technology.
It started. Someone in the chat room said, politics got into my tech show.
It's not.
This is not politics chat room.
We're going back to a new world of media that is powered by Google and Facebook, basically. What we're talking about is the impact of those two mighty companies on a nation state, on the world.
And I think this is a fundamental, like what we're seeing, what we saw during the election, what we're seeing in all kinds of ways, whether it's fake news or is just the disintermediation of traditional gatekeepers. And there are all kinds of implications to that. I think I said at one point, you know, when I was cheering for the disintermediation,
we all thought that was a good idea at the time.
Right. Well, and I was only looking at the good aspects, right? I was only looking at people's ability to choose and to produce news themselves and the democratization, which is great. But we all know that there are downsides to democratization. You see them all the time, and we're seeing them now. We're seeing the sort of dark side of that disintermediation as well.
I'm just fascinated, and I don't know. I don't have a conclusion about it, but I'm really fascinated in the way the president-elect continues to use Twitter to not. He's much more masterful than mere disintermediation, but uses his Twitter account to set the daily press agenda.
Exactly.
Look at the
ethics thing, where I believe that media have missed the story that in fact there was an immediate uprising of people phoning their representatives.
Representatives were already
retreating, but as soon as Trump came into it, boom, he gets all the credit, all the attention, everything else. He is setting the agenda for media in ways
that's exactly what he wants. And what do you do? The New York Times and the Washington Post run a headline saying this happened because Trump tweeted. I mean, that's not, even if they go into the details in the story, 80% of the people are never going to read those details. Right. And he's getting the headlines he wants, even if what he says is not true.
For a long time, I've said, the media should stop paying attention to Twitter storms. They seem to me to pay an inordinate amount of attention to Twitter storms. Well, you know, when Steve Martin had to pull down his tweet honoring Carrie Fisher, you know, what happened? You know, 50 people on Twitter complained and suddenly that became a story. And I said, you got to ignore what people say on Twitter. It's not of weight. But when the president-elect says something on Twitter, it does have some weight. Now, I noticed that a lot of executives, most of the executives have quit Twitter. I mean, literally have left. The executive team seems to be evaporating at Twitter. And I'm wondering why that is. Twitter, for Donald Trump alone, Twitter has suddenly become I mean, this is as important as the New York Times. This is the where you find out what the president's thinking every minute.
So if Twitter went out of business tomorrow,
yes.
Gone tomorrow, just to what suddenly, would, oops, we ran Trump out of all our money. Oops, we never figured it out. Sorry, bye. Right. Well, but that's the question. What impact would that have on politics in America today?
Facebook doesn't have the same.
Yeah, it doesn't.
You why
can't
not
speak to everybody at once?
Okay, that's why.
Well, but Facebook. So Facebook is where it's what real people use, and Twitter is what the media uses. And so Trump knows that all he has to do is fire off a tweet at 3 o'clock in the morning, and journalists will run after
and,
it.
And they have
like
to, by the way.
A rabbit.
They can't sure they ignore, do. You know, sure you can do. Ignore Twitter storms about Steve Martin, but you can't ignore
but
when
if the president-elect
says something.
Tweets yeah. something. Right. And certainly when he's president, you will have to. But right. I think it's all in how you describe it. You can't just have a story saying Trump tweeted X or put in the headline, you know, Trump says millions of people voted illegally. That's why I was so upset when Gerard Baker at The Wall Street Journal said that he wants to be very careful about, well, if he repeats it multiple times after it's been proven not to be true, that's a lie.
Bingo, Matthew. Exactly. It's an easy test. If with knowledge, whether or not with malice, with knowledge, you repeat something that is right. known to be wrong, that's a lie.
So either he's doing
he can't lose because he's going to get people talking about it. It doesn't, you call it a lie. It doesn't matter. It's the it was a great conversation with Tim Wu. I keep talking about it, but he's talking about the Attention Merchants, his new book. He says there are three rules, but rule number one is get the attention. There's no such thing as bad publicity. Get the attention.
Right.
It's as if this was invented for Donald Trump. And it's in a way amazing that no one came upon this idea sooner.
Well, and you could argue he was sort of bred in the reality TV tank in a way as a creature born for this moment.
He
like
was made
he and Twitter.
For this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
he was made for
my
this.
My question
it
is,
it keeps reminding me of Bane. You know, you think you've discovered the darkness. You know, I lived in the darkness. Like that's Trump. Like he, social media basically gave birth to him.
So
Jerry Baker from the Journal just today wrote an editorial defending his view about lies.
Yeah,
unfortunately, I don't pay for the Journal, so I can't read it, but I put it on the rundown.
I do. I'll pay for it. So
is it that? I was just looking at it.
Is it that a lie? Say calling something a lie is a kind of a pejorative word.
He's saying you have to know the intent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yes. He's saying you have to assume intent. Saying lie assumes intent, and all I'm saying is if Trump repeats the same thing about Muslims and 9/11 or millions of people voting illegally or after
Obama's
it's been proven wrong.
I'm amazed and I kind of admire Trump's willingness to just say something that's blatantly non-factual. He must know it's blatantly non-factual or not.
Of course he knows.
Okay, so see, I can't decide if he's brilliant or an idiot. Or a brilliant idiot. I don't know if he's Peter Sellers from Being There,
right,
or Machiavelli, some brilliant mastermind of politics.
That is the key question, isn't it?
Because
I think he's sort of halfway in between. I think he is.
So Jay Rosen.
There's no question he's brilliant. Oh, Rosen's pieces, by the way, we'll talk about those in a second. There's no question he's brilliantly using misdirection, propaganda, outright lies, and half truths. To shape something, and it looks brilliant.
It is brilliant, and yet it's not. It's not. I think he's sort of a lot of it is.
It's
he
gut.
Kind of
it's
wings
instinct.
It.
He's instinct.
Yeah, it's gut. Exactly, instinct. And he knows that the press likes a good headline, and he knows that people like a circus, and he knows that saying something untrue has literally no downside. So
the press is made for him. He's exactly what the press loves because
Twitter
it's
was and
it's,
yeah and Twitter was made for him. But look,
he's a clickbait factory.
Yeah,
right. So all the things that we've talked about related to ad tech and Google and Facebook and sort of the changing of the media, the structure of the media. That's why I said when in a earlier post that he took advantage of effectively a broken media landscape, and his strategy plays into that perfectly because he knows that regardless of what he says, 1,000 articles are going to be written about it.
Now, we're going to see after January 20th, this all lends itself very well to a campaign does it lend itself well to governing is another matter.
There's no rules anymore.
But there's no, we don't know.
Not effective governing, but if you want to cause a storm.
If you think governing is consensus building and.
Then no, it's not. But if you think governing is getting a lot of headlines, all you have to do is tweet about
Taiwan. This is leadership. This is leadership.
This is tearing down institutions. This goes back to the institutional revolution.
But maybe we need to tear down institutions. They're failing us in so many ways.
Let's start a nuclear arms race. Like, literally, that's a tweet. So then, is that governing?
Wow. Anyway, just to finish my thought, and then we'll get to Jay Rosen.
Yeah.
Twitter leadership team. Adam Bain, COO, gone. Katie Jacobs-Staunton, VP Global Media, gone. Adam Messenger, CTO, gone. Alex, Reddy, Senior Vice President Engineering, gone. Brian Skipper, VP Human Resources, gone. Look at this is a tweet from Seth Figerman. Twitter's 2016 in a nutshell. All but three of their executive team gone. Why are people leaving? This is Twitter's golden age.
Well, not if you're an executive, it isn't. I mean, if any of those people had options and so
cash,
on. There's
cash in. Do you think it's purely financial?
There's no point staying.
I wouldn't be surprised if some of these people say, I don't want to be a codependent on Donald Trump. I don't want to provide him with a platform.
Oh, it's a Rockettes problem.
It's the Rockettes problem.
That's interesting.
Let's not call it that.
Well, it's probably the two combined, right? I'm going to cash in, and by the way, I don't want to watch this happen.
Well, and I think it's probably been torture. I mean, just even the last year, a bunch of it has been consolidation of power, I think, under Anthony Noto. At least that's my impression.
He's the current CFO. But will be running everything, right?
Pretty much running everything.
Yeah.
And what he isn't running, Jack runs.
Yeah.
As well as running a completely different company.
This year, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 VP level and higher people departing.
A lot of this, it wasn't sold, Leo. Right? Company, by all rumors, wanted it sold. These guys wanted to be able to cash out that way. Once that doesn't happen, they say, well, that's why I was sticking around.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. That makes
sense. There's always been two different things, Twitter the service and Twitter the company.
Yes.
And Twitter the service, you could argue, is amazing and incredible and has all sorts of positive things. And Twitter the company has been a train wreck.
So Jay Rosen, who's your counterpart, Jeff, at NYU. He's a professor.
He's much smarter than I am.
I put you guys on the equal
pedestal.
Tell
him you said that.
Yeah.
He knows I think that.
He writes at pressthink.org and did a two-parter on the prospects for the American press in this new era, in the age of Trump, as he calls it. It's a very long two-parter. With many, many suggestions. First, he says what the problem is going to be, and then he suggests how the press can handle this.
Saying that there's no single solution, that he doesn't have a solution, but here's you know what.
No, he's 39 steps.
Yeah, and even then, we're not there.
So 17 paragraphs in part one, in which he says winter is coming. How bad is it? Bad. I will explain why. Any bright signs? A few. And then in part two, he writes, this is book length practically. I mean,
it's an excellent, excellent piece. And as a result, he appeared on a couple shows around.
I saw him on MSNBC and yeah.
Well, I left a comment just saying that I think that and this goes to your question before, is he a genius? Is he a Chance the Gardener? Mm-hmm. I think that we in press have to test hypotheses, right? Is he in it for the money? Is he in someone's pocket? Is he ready to kill institutions? Is he insane, which is one of them? Is he just right and half of America loves it? You know, each of these is a hypothesis that you have to test in terms of, because we can't understand why. All the rules are broken. None of the old rules work. Jay's response to me was, you assume, Jarvis, that people are willing to throw out the way they have been covering this. And I said, well, I hope they're, and he's not so optimistic.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, yeah.
And I don't think you can take a media that enjoys a horse race, you know, and sort of click revenue the way the current media does and suddenly turn it into one that can challenge a president like Trump.
It's especially when you have a media that's economically challenged as it is.
Right.
The economic pressures are just going to simply drop. You know, I mean, as Les Moonves says, all this is very good for the bottom line.
Right. It's terrible for the nation, but it's great for CBS. And if you work at a media company, you have to think, yeah, we would love to take some time and dig into Trump's background, but we have to publish 45 stories a day that are 200 words long with a video clip in them, or we don't make any money.
Part of me is actually enjoying this. I have to remind myself that there are a lot of people who will suffer.
That it's terrible.
Yes. It is in a way the end game of something that we've been chronicling for the last 20 years, mm-hmm. which is the complete mm-hmm. disruption of society by technology. Mm-hmm. And it's accelerating. We haven't even started to see the acceleration of automation and artificial intelligence, although we're starting to see the fault lines form. There's a company, an insurance company, I think it was in China. Where was it? Or Japan. Japan, that's replacing several dozen of its employees with IBM's Watson.
Yeah.
To do their insurance actuarial stuff and so forth. You see Foxconn saying, the company that makes the iPhone, among many other products, saying our end game is to have no human employees but robots. They fired 30,000 employees and replaced them with robots. And this is
30,000.
30,000. That was a few months ago. They are even contemplating building factories in the United States. I'm sure they're assessing a future where there are high tariffs, as there are in Brazil, for instance. It's very expensive to bring bring phones in from another country. So Foxconn built a Brazil plant and is building an India plant so they can make them there. But there'll be robotic plants because they don't. So it's a very interesting, not only has the last 20 years been total disruption, and now we're seeing the disruption of media, the disruption of politics, but we're about to see a huge disruption in the economy as a result as well.
And the kind of people who did vote for the jobs that will disappear are the ones that were crucial. When every truck driver in this country is threatened.
Yeah. Long haul truck driver, cab driver, cashier, all the jobs that you could get with sort of a high school diploma and not a lot of skills, what happens to those people?
Yeah. Well, and I talked to my kids who are in their early 20s and Michael, who's 14, and Michael's friends. And I talked to them often about how to kind of navigate this, because those jobs that you are preparing for today may not exist tomorrow, even if you're going to college. And that's the thing. I think a lot of people think, oh, I know I'm going for a profession. I'm going to college. I'll be protected. They're going to have their comeuppance as well. So Finland is trying a small experiment on basic income. Mm-hmm. 560 euros to 2,000 Finns. Guaranteed. You don't have to say what you're going to do with it. You don't have to look for work. I just saw, is it India that's looking at basic income as well?
I mean, the real point in the Finnish thing, which I didn't really understand until I read the stories, is that the disincentive people had finding work because they would lose benefits.
Right.
So now you will not lose this money and you can get work. Yeah. And the presumption is more people will go get work now.
According to the Business Insider, the Indian government is set to endorse universal basic income. This comes from Professor Standing, who's founded an advocacy group called Basic Income Earth Network, BIEN. In 1986, he says in this month, India will release a report saying it's feasible and, quote, basically the way forward. The idea being it's kind of super welfare. Everybody gets a basic income. It's a low income. Mm-hmm. And a number of people have pointed out, including the Democratic caucus, that the problem with this is it replaces all entitlements. Right. It's all you get. You don't get health care. You don't get anything. Exactly. You don't get food stamps. You get a basic income. But everybody gets it.
But that's what I was talking to somebody about this just the other day, and And I was saying, it seems like a good idea. And they said, it will seem more like a good idea. Let's say it was in the US. If you say, these are all the things you won't get if you get the right. sort of basic
here's what you're
income.
Gonna, here's what you're getting.
Right. You're going to have to give up all these healthcare benefits, all these, you know, tax rebates, all these, everything. And then just do the math for sort of average person under the poverty line.
Scotland is apparently piloting a universal basic income scheme in Fife and Glasgow. Every citizen, a universal basic income. I think these all are roughly the same plan, right? The experiment was it India? The experiment there has been quite successful. The nutrition's improved. Let me see if I can find this. The pilots in Madhya Pradesh launched in 2010, 6 years ago. They provided every man, woman, and child across 8 villages with a modest basic income for 18 months. Welfare improved dramatically in the villages, particularly nutrition among the children, healthcare, sanitation, school attendance, and performance. The most striking thing, which we hadn't actually anticipated, is that the emancipatory effect was greater than the monetary effect. In other words, it enabled people to have a sense of control. They pooled some of the money to pay down their debts. They increased decisions on escaping from debt bondage. The women developed their own capacity to make their own decision about their own lives. The general tenor of all these communities has been remarkably positive. Now, I should say this quote is from the guy who's been promoting this for some time. There is a $20 million trial set to launch in California this year. We're moving rapidly towards this idea. This is something Mark Andreessen, the creative network.
This is what the Valley thinks to do. Yeah, we'll destroy the world, but here's some money. You know, eat some cake.
But you could argue that, let's say you could replace the things that people get who are on welfare or below the poverty line or whatever. You could replace them with a single basic income. That you could argue that would get rid of so much bureaucracy and I mean, just think of how simple it could be compared to what we have now. Multiple conflicting departments, multiple conflicting, you know, if you could kind of simplify it, you could save a lot of money for one thing.
It's very interesting. We live in, that's what I'm just fascinated by what's happening. And I have to remind myself there are real human consequences.
But I think it's also when you look at particularly Silicon Valley and you cover things like whether it's self-driving cars or whatever, you get caught up in the sort of, wow, this would be so amazing, the kind of, you know, Star Wars or Star Trek future that could be possible. You know, you think about Star Trek and the just your cup of tea materializing. Well, what about all the people who used to make cups of tea and their whole job was to, you know, work in a cafeteria? All those people are out of work. Where the hell are they? Well, Star Trek doesn't tell you. Presumably they're servicing spaceships or something. Who knows? But you sort of, it's easy to get caught up in the gee whiz part.
Silicon Valley's premise is that automation, artificial intelligence will make goods so cheap, virtually free,
right,
that there'll be plentitude. I'm not sure where the money for universal basic income comes from. I mean, all of these things are small scale trials, which aren't going to really show the real problems that a universal
full-fledged
it comes in the long run, Leo, when you have huge corporate profitability out of all those jobs that are eliminated.
It sounds like Google and Facebook
pay for all that.
It sounds like a perpetual motion machine.
Exactly.
Because
the problem is that how do those companies that got rid of all those jobs make all this money?
Where's the money coming from?
Nobody can afford to buy anything from them.
Well, we'll find out.
No, our kids will find out.
I'm just glad I'm 60. Wow. What a world, huh?
Yeah.
Let's take a break. We're going to CES. Stacy will be back from CES. We'll talk about that in a second. I'll tell you what to do with your money, all this money you got now. You better invest it. Stock market is getting close to hitting, the Dow Jones getting close to hitting 20,000. Now, I know a lot of you are smart folks who thinks, oh, I'll just take advantage of this and do my own investing. Can I recommend a better way to invest? Better Mint. It is the largest independent automated investing service, $5.5 billion under investment, over 180,000 customers. Their portfolio is designed to achieve optimal results no matter what level of investment. And because there's no minimum, you can try it right now for just a few bucks. Betterment's goal-based investing framework and advice algorithm will let you know if you're on track in seconds. And by the way, you will save on fees alone. This is something people never think about, is the cost of investing. Automated investing is a fraction of what you'd pay for traditional financial services. Save up to 600% on fees. It means you keep more of your money. No trade fees, no transaction fees, no rebalancing fees. By the way, you can add your own investments from the outside world to Betterment's dashboard so you can see your total net worth in one place. Betterment customers, through diversification, automated rebalancing, and lower fees, can expect 4.3% higher returns than the typical do-it-yourself investor. Don't do it yourself. Do it with Betterment. Smart deposits means you can automatically invest cash, which is a very good idea. Just get it out of your sight before you even see it. Every time you make a deposit or receive dividends, Betterment will intelligently rebalance your portfolio. I really like that. That's something everybody should do, knows they need to do, and don't do. Betterment does tax loss harvesting, too, to keep taxes down and increase after-tax returns. End-to-end investing. That means faster cash transfers, tax forms available at the earliest possible date, secure investing. It goes like that. And there is absolutely, there's a human on the other end of the line. So support specialists are there 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Investing involves risk, so I want you to read up at betterment.com. But I think when you read, you'll see it's a better way. Betterment. Investing made better. Betterment, B-E-T-T-E-R-M-E-N-T, betterment.com. And we thank them for their support of This Week in Google. So, all right, enough. We've talked enough about how the world is going to end. Let's talk about all the fun toys we'll have at the end as we're going. I do like it that you can ask, and I haven't tried this. Do you have a Google Home handy?
Anybody? I do indeed.
Ask it what your New Year's resolution should be.
All right, let's hit over the mic.
They did this with VentureBeat, did this.
Okay, Google, what should my New Year's resolutions be?
Take up a new hobby like bird watching or calligraphy.
What else?
That's dopey.
Okay, Google. What else?
You'll have to translate. I can't.
Yeah. No, I just said what else I could ask it.
Oh.
New Year's resolutions.
So you, this is what it told VentureBeat. And it kept asking, so it gives you one at a time.
Ah, okay.
You could write a novel or keep a journal. Either way, writing is good for you in many ways.
What should my New Year's resolution be?
You could write a novel or just keep a journal. Either way, writing is good for you in lots of ways.
Yeah, there's no way to make a living, Google. I can tell you that.
I'm a writer, Google. That's not a hobby. Yeah.
Look how you're ruining for us writers. That's what all the writers are saying.
Don't tell other people to write, God damn it.
Yes, that's right. No more content, damn it.
This is terrible advice. You could write a novel.
What are you thinking?
That's terrible advice. Writing is good for you? Ask a writer.
Google.
I don't think so. You guys write for a living. I tried. Try to make someone smile every day. That's good advice.
Oh, F me.
Go ahead, ask again. See what else it says.
Okay, Google, what should my New Year's resolution be?
My apologies. I don't understand.
Okay, Google, what should my New Year's resolution be?
Try to make someone smile every day.
We've heard that.
Screw you, Google. Don't you know the world's going to hell in a handbasket? Huh? And you're a part of it. It's your fault.
Jeff, it might be great to volunteer. You will help your community, plus meet some kind-hearted people.
Because you have no jobs, because we took them all away.
Jeff, you could learn a new language. And stop swearing.
You should take your pills and report to your customer service
center. Exactly. Jeff, a nurse is on her way.
Yeah.
You could pick up a new hobby. Oh, you did that.
Newman!
Ask it this one. Okay, Google, how do I lose weight?
Is that a hint, Leo?
No, that's for me.
Okay, Google, how do I lose weight?
According to WebMD, if you want to lose weight faster, you will need to eat less and exercise more.
Screw
you.
Nice.
For 1 hour per day, you could lose.
Stop, Google.
Okay, stop Google. Now. Stop. I don't want to hear it.
Okay, Google. What would a good new career for me be?
Sorry, I'm not sure how to help with that.
Yeah.
You could do voiceovers for automated assistants.
That's about all that's left. Speaking of automated assistants, Amazon's Echo everywhere at CES. Many mm-hmm. companies putting Echo in cars, in televisions.
Hotels.
She's going to be ubiquitous. That's not the story, but I'll get to that one in a second. She's going to be ubiquitous. And that was kind of a surprise. And by the way, kudos to Amazon. Man, they have really mm-hmm. jumped on this bandwagon with both feet and obviously yep. has been spending 2016 making deals.
I read the hotel announcement. I think it was a Vegas chain or something like that. They're going to be in every room.
I think it's one of the Wynn hotels, the Aria.
Yeah. That makes huge sense to me.
How does it know it's you? In a second. Or does it? How does
well,
that
I asked, that? And they, it I turns know. Out it's associated with the Wynn's account. So, oh, nice. None of the data is yours. It's all that goes.
But
to
you
the
can
hotel.
Turn the lights on. You can close the curtains. You can turn the TV on. Yeah. You can do stuff like that.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And even cast things presumably to the TV.
Amen 70 says the new slogan for Motel 6 is, "We'll leave the mic on for you."
Ben Thompson at Strat Hackery had a piece just this morning about Amazon and how Alexa is effectively, they want to be the operating system of the home. And I think that makes perfect sense. And they're far ahead of Google, I would say, at this point.
Yeah, of everybody.
For that kind of connectivity, yes. But the argument I've made in the past, Matthew, is that I think Google's ahead in the technology behind natural language and
it could be more of your life
and more things. Yeah.
But I think Amazon, so then the question is, can Amazon scale up in that area faster than Google can kind of cut the kind of deals that Amazon has or the question. Become as
ubiquitous? Remember, Amazon has a 2-year lead on this. Now, that doesn't mean Google can't catch up, but... I think this is huge. For instance, this is where you see the 2-year lead. They were already making all these hardware deals. Ben writes, first, by abstracting away the hardware, an operating system reduces the plane of competition for hardware providers to merely performance.
Yep.
It's not lock-in, it's performance. In the short term, this increases competition among hardware providers, which benefits the operating system. In the long run, when performance becomes good enough, hardware becomes commoditized, which means the operating system captures the bulk of profits in the value chain. That's very interesting. Ben
and
is
goes
always
through,
very
you know, Microsoft and Windows and so yep. on, and the choke points, as he calls them. And I mean, I think Amazon's got a big head start. It'll be interesting to see.
And Amazon is Google interested in Matthew. Now that you mention it, Amazon is following Google's Android strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Open it up and get it everywhere. And I'm surprised Google hasn't begun to do that yet.
Ben says Google Amazon really was a platform, was an operating system for the internet.
For the internet, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Close. It was close anyway.
And benefited by that, right?
And you could argue that Amazon, I mean, Google's probably thinking, well, how the hell do we make money off of this thing? Amazon's got a whole revenue-generating business that doesn't require this device. They can make incremental revenue on you ordering things through your Alexa.
It's actually brilliant because suddenly I can order, they're going to mm-hmm. put it on appliances. So I'm standing at the stove and I can say, hey, Echo, I need more butter. I mean, this is even if they didn't charge license fees, this is huge.
And the dash button was a sort of interim thing, I think.
They have been slowly perfected. I am just... every time I look at what Jeff Bezos is up to, I am more and more impressed.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, is he smart.
He even is turning the Washington Post around.
Yeah, subscriptions way up. I finally plunked down the $10 a month.
Yeah, because at that price, what the
he's
hell?
Got it. Well, you know what? He's figured out also how to do a paywall right, I think. You get a lot of free articles. And just when you get to that article you really want to read, you get the first paragraph and then it says, oh.
If I also think that a lot of people subscribe because of David Fahrenthold.
I agree.
Because they did great work.
They
want to
support
election.
It. I mean, both the times in the Post benefited from Trump's election. Both Definitely. Of them mm-hmm. went through the roof. And
NPR did too.
Did it? As did the ACLU, the EFF, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and Planned Parenthood. They've all benefited. Yep. In a way, that's why I love seeing, by the way, I've never not liked getting a Republican president or a Republican Congress, because even though I'm a liberal, it galvanizes the left in a way that having Obama in presidency for 8 years did not. This is good for
the left.
Good.
Is still fighting among themselves.
It's salubrious. Well,
is it good?
I'm trying to find a silver lining.
That's the way you are. Yes, you try. I appreciate that.
I try. I'm trying.
I'm sure Hitler galvanized the left,
telling me
too.
To do good things in a year.
Hitler was the left, by the way.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the irony of all
so
that.
He was so left, he was right.
Yeah. Populist movements are often end up fascist.
The worst.
The people, they're horrible.
The worst.
The worst. Let's see. Trying to find more tech stuff here so we can...
it's a good idea.
Don't want to upset the Trump cult. By the way, I'm convinced now. This is the best way to think of this is as a cult.
It's bigger than that, though.
Well, but if when you...
Sorry,
when
are we talking about Amazon now? Or
yes. Hyundai's going to have Google Home in its cars. So Google does have some deals.
There you go.
Yep.
Well, won't they have to call it Google Car then?
Yeah, I'm not home.
It's not really your home.
That's a little weird.
Unless you live in your car, in which case, that's fine.
Very strange. I wouldn't, you know what? Google is absolutely well poised for this if they get off the, you know, if they move fast, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not what they're the best at.
No. And Amazon's been there and is making the deals. And I love to see this competition, though. That's going to be good.
I think it's interesting.
Well, now you have
Google,
Ford, and Toyota ganging up to keep Apple and Google from owning the car.
Yeah. That's disappointing. That's disappointing. You've
I'm not buying a Toyota because it doesn't do
real. You wanted it.
Yeah, I'd rather have a Ford, you know, operating system than a Google. Who's going to say that?
Yeah.
Ford does now enable both Apple and Android.
Thank goodness.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah, they're all hedging.
I'm still not buying one.
But I agree with you, Jeff. Their real goal is to make sure that they can keep hegemony in the automobile.
Yeah, they have to control that platform.
Yeah.
Car is just a platform now.
Well, but here's but hold on a second. Hold on a second. So you go to the future where you don't own a car, the car comes and picks you up. Then the operating system has to go with you, not with the car. You can't, you know, you're going to get in different cars all the time and don't send me an automated Chrysler because it doesn't have my OS. That's not going to work, right? I'm going to take my personal OS device, whatever we call a phone in the future, and it's going to take over whatever environment I'm in.
You think?
I hope.
I hope.
That's the only thing that's good for a consumer.
Well, yeah, which means it's probably not going to happen. We're going to have multiple competing platforms that are completely proprietary, and you'll get in one and your phone won't work and it won't understand your commands because you're not using the keyword.
Yeah. Hey, here's good news for you, Jeff. Maybe. I don't know. We've been wondering what's happening with the Chromebook Pixel. Apparently, the Samsung Chromebook Pro is the next Google Chromebook.
What?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. This was a CES announcement. Samsung, we've heard rumors about the Chromebook
Pro. We've been waiting for this machine. We thought it was going to be at year end. Oh.
Apparently, made in partnership directly with Google.
Wow.
Chromebook Pro and the Chromebook Plus. 12.3-inch LED touchscreen, 2400 by 1600, 4 gigs of RAM, 32-gig hard drive, 39-watt-hour battery. That's not a huge one. That's about 8 hours of life. A 720p webcam, 2 USB Type-C ports, much like the Pixel, one on the left, one on the right. SD card support, again, like the Pixel. Although, you do have this really cool flip-over thing. So,
yep, and a stylus.
And what's nice about that is if you've got the Android App Store on here, which you clearly do, see there's the Play Store logo, Right. Now you've got a nice Android device as well. This is not just the Chromebook Pixel replacement, but I guess it's kind of, in a way, the Pixel C replacement. $449 starting price in February.
I'll buy it.
This looks like the one to get. It's thin, it's light, it's powerful.
How much is it weigh?
Let me see. I don't see that anywhere. Well,
fake news. You just said it was light. How do you know?
Because it looks light.
It looks really light.
Jeez.
All right. Let me click a link.
Because the Asus is 2.6 pounds. The Asus that's coming out, it looks nice, too. It's also $499.
This is all good news. It just means there's a lot of competition in the Chromebook space, which is great.
Which is good.
Yeah. I don't know, but it is thin. So, of course, Asus makes very thin stuff, too. I wonder if the Google Store is
2.38.
Oh, that's nice.
That's a good question.
2.38.
Okay.
That's good. That's light, right? What is the Asus?
2.6.
Okay. All right. There you go. Google, let's go to the Chromebook section of the Google Store and see if we're seeing anything. No, not yet.
Not yet?
Okay. Not yet.
I wonder if they'll keep the Pixel C.
Kudos, by the way, to Google, which introduced Type-C and is now one.
Yes.
It's everywhere.
It is.
It's the clear winner for ports. And we're seeing at CES a lot of PCs, all of them with Type-C. And even companies like HP, which made a docking station, have abandoned their old docking station and replaced it with Type-C. That's really where it's all going. Lenovo, maybe it was Lenovo, not HP. Asus also announced a phone, a new Tango Daydream-ready phone, the Zenfone AR, and a two-camera Zenfone 3 Zoom. We kind of knew about this. Qualcomm accidentally released this earlier. 5.7-inch display, which will fit in your Daydream visor. Tango, I think the jury's still out on Tango, but that is an augmented reality technology that kind of what learns your, I don't understand it fully.
Well, so Leo, there's actually two Chromebooks from Samsung and Google.
Yes, the Pro and the Plus.
Pro and the Plus. Right. So what's the difference between the one is the chip.
Better chip.
Yeah. So there's
is that
one
mainly it?
Fancier one.
Both are the same screen. Okay, I see. I missed that. Okay. All right. Yeah, I'll order it.
Do you need a new one? I gave Abby my Chromebook Pixel, actually. So
I take on every trip now? I take the Pixel C.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything you could do on a Pixel C that you can't do on a Chromebook with the Android store on it? I guess there are some Android apps you can't put on there.
What do you mean? Pixel C is Android.
No, the Chromebook with Android.
Oh, with Android.
With the Play Store versus the Pixel
C. No, I think that you can do that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it weighs more. It's bigger than the Pixel C.
Yeah.
The Pixel C and the keyboard.
But it's
waves.
Yeah. I would like to see a new Pixel C, actually. Google says there are dozens of Tango-enabled apps coming out in the next month using AR.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and by the way, the Zenfone has one model with 5,000 milliamp hours. That's a giant battery.
Wow. Is it like 2 inches thick?
Yeah, must be. but that's really great. That one is the Zenfone 3 Zoom, which has the two cameras. It is a smaller display, 5.5-inch HD 1080p display. So with that battery and that display, that should be a beast. That should go forever. Qualcomm also announced its newest Qualcomm processor, the Snapdragon 835. This is a very interesting processor. We'd heard some about it earlier. This is a 10-nanometer FinFET design, which means they've scooped Intel in terms of the first 10-nanometer FinFET. But it also is going to be an amazing chip. You probably, if you're going to buy a new Android device, you're probably going to want to have it with a Snapdragon 835 in it. It has very high-end GPUs. It's basically going to compete with Intel chips.
Hmm.
In fact, Qualcomm even said we anticipate it in mobile computing. Chromebooks run fine, by the way, on ARM, on Snapdragons. They also say
in Gadget piece I just read said, ARM's not going to be so great.
I think they're wrong. I think Intel's very worried. Microsoft has announced Windows on ARM already.
Hmm.
The 635, I think, is very close to desktop class processor, but very low power. It's about a third the size of the 820 or 821, their previous processor. It will, which means lower power, lower heat, smaller. They see it in virtual reality and, more importantly, augmented reality visors like the Microsoft HoloLens. 25% more performance, 40% less power. That's the kind of numbers Intel hasn't delivered in years. It's been a long time. 25% improvement in 3D graphics performance. Support of 60 times the colors with the Adreno 540 visual processing subsystem. It will support 4K Ultra HD video with HDR10, 10-bit gamut, wide color gamut displays for HDR video. This thing is a beast. Now, it's also not out. So if it lives up to these specs, this is a world beater. This is significant. And it's a big deal for Google. It means Android and Chromebooks can compete very, very well with desktop computers and servers, too. Hey, you should tell your friends over at CNN that when they want to talk about hacking, they probably shouldn't use screens from video games because, well, people will know and recognize it. CNN talking about how Russians hack things used screens.
Russians are supposed to have very old, bad computers to hack.
I should show you the video because, you know, they slant it and they say, oh, then nobody will ever know what that is. But of course, you know how people are.
They of course.
Recognized it immediately as the little mini game inside of Fallout 4 where you have to. And
why
way,
would you even pick that? Like, why?
Well,
just because it has code, I guess.
You have to hack it. So you have to enter your password now. Two attempts left. You have to look at the the hex listing and figure out what the password is.
So that's hacking, right?
That's hacking. Hell yeah. Boom. Video game hacking. Of course, who found out? Reddit. You can't get anything by Reddit. You know, this is actually television's big problem. You got to have pictures. It was always our problem on tech TV too. You got to have pictures. And when you're talking about very abstract things.
But the thing is, Leo, so does every courts article. So does every tweet these days. You have to have
every pictures. Website. Yeah.
Every website. Sure. Yeah.
I was looking for something to illustrate an article about digital advertising. Good luck finding an image in an image gallery to illustrate that.
What was the motherboard article you wanted to talk about, Matthew? I
forgot. Oh, it was about data formats in the Star Wars movies. It's by Sarah Jeong, J-E-O-N-G.
I love this.
Just hysterical. And it doesn't, I don't think there's any real big spoilers about Rogue One, but a big part of Rogue One is they have to retrieve this data about the Death Star. And it comes on this giant, what looks like a hard drive. They have to access it in this secure facility with these robotic arms and then transmit it from a satellite dish. But it mentions all kinds of stuff like how, you know, basically a service robot can access any port and any door on the Death Star by simply plugging in,
The
gizmo.
Thank God, you know, because they finally figured out how to make everything talk to everything else.
And then, of course, she gets the plans for the Death Star from this huge hard drive, but then they put it on a tiny disk that gets jammed into R2-D2.
Right. Somehow so R2-D2 has a port for that.
Yeah, or something. But then no one can read the disk because it's some ancient file format or something.
Got something jammed in here real good. This little R2 unit, it's got something jammed in there real good.
So he has no clue what it is or what to do with it, but somehow it generates a hologram.
Somehow he plays with it and suddenly the hologram plays.
It's just it is really well written, though, about, you know, that you can think about, well, does the Empire have its own data formats? And if it does, then how does Like, are there hackers who are hacking the Empire's data formats?
Yeah, what about encryption? You'd think if you built a Death Star, you'd encrypt that those plans pretty darn well.
Well, and you probably
they thought
would
through
use,
whether or not you have underwear in space, but they didn't think through all of this.
You probably wouldn't use ports that any service robot could access and disable all the doors in the prison section of the Death Star.
That's a children's story. The stormtroopers can't shoot straight. Although
the part that got me...
I put on a stormtrooper mask and I know why. You can't see a thing in
it. You can't see a thing, yeah. The thing that got me about the movie was because it's so long ago, they have to recreate the terrible display that everybody had back then. So the targeting systems in the ship look like a video game from 1981. And yet they have these floor-to-ceiling screens with these, you know, basically what are 8-bit kind of displays projected on them. It must have been horrible for the special effects guys.
Well, we learned in the very first Star Wars movies that the data was stored on stolen data tapes.
Okay.
See, so remember Darth Vader, your sad devotion to that ancient religion.
Right.
There was a guy talking to. Yeah. So that explains why they had to make the hard drive look like stolen data tapes.
Like a data tape. Yeah.
They had a canonical responsibility to the original source material.
But so you've got that huge disk, and then whatever they need fits onto a tiny.
There it is.
It looks like a floppy.
There's the disk.
And then when it's rendered, of course, on the Rebel ship, it's basically just a drawing in white of a circle.
I have not seen Rogue One, so don't tell me anything. But I understand it does explain the strategic positioning of a Womp Rat-sized exhaust port.
It does. Okay. It does. And actually, that's one of the big...
There it is. Here's the drawing. The film. This is the render.
That's what you get. That's what you get. From this giant hard drive.
Oh, Lord. Sarah Jiang, good job. She does a great job at Vice at Motherboard.
Yeah.
I really like Motherboard. I hope Vice continues to do well with that. According to my information, it should appear in this quadrant here.
Oh, yeah, and it mentioned the earlier movies where the Jedis basically have what looks like a glowing marble.
Yeah,
that somehow stores data. It's not clear.
Well, they're Jedis. They can do all sorts of
things. What data format that is, exactly.
Yeah, they can do all sorts of things. Here's little people in helmets. They will be much safer there with my master. Count Dooku. There it is.
There again, high tech.
Here is the Death Star. Simplified for your approval. All right. Well, fortunately, it doesn't really matter, does it? Yeah, these are the great data ports that just R2 just happens
where you can
to
access.
Have.
Everything.
Connector. He just goes any way you want.
Yep. Just open the door to the cell where perfect fit. Yep, 2 seconds later.
Yeah.
No problem.
I just plug into this port right here.
Yeah.
Why on earth, asks Sarah Jiang, are ports standardized in the future? Actually, the
data storage isn't.
Data storage isn't. But the ports. Oh, we got consistency there. Well, it all goes back to the great Zigbee Wars of 2017.
Yeah, I'm surprised nobody has to carry around dongles to jack into the, you know, Type C port.
Really?
And cursing Apple along the way.
That's right.
Dongles.
Damn the Empire.
Dongles! Anything else to talk about here?
Let's see.
I have to say, not very impressed. And I'm not alone on this. Dan Gukin wrote a good piece in Ars Technica and elsewhere on the report, the JAR, the Joint Analysis Report on Russian Cyber Attacks from the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, on how the Russians hacked the DNC. Either the Russians have the skills of a 14-year-old script kiddie, or this report was heavily redacted. But this is WordFence, which is a WordPress security company, did a really great job of analyzing the software. They found, for instance, that the software that the JAR report pointed to was an old, out-of-date Ukrainian PHP exploit that had been much updated since then, and by that anybody could buy on the web freely and easily. Pass. How'd they find that out? They Googled it. You can get it too. Just Google Pass 310. Current version is 4-something, but anyway, it's 4.1.1b is the most recent version if you want to make sure you have the latest. We are going to do a whole security now on this Pass malware because it actually is kind of interesting. But it doesn't seem like it's in any way a smoking gun pointing to Putin's involvement in this at all.
Like they're going to reveal their sources.
But why why do the report at all if you're just going to make crap up?
That's what I mean. All right. So on a lighter note,
yes,
under Google, under the rundown, the Google, what's it called? Tilt Brush. Have you seen this?
Oh,
stuff?
Let's show this video. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this video is cool.
Tilt Brush is a program that you can use with the Vive. We've actually played with it. A lot of our staff loves it. It allows you to paint in a 3D space. And actually, I've talked to people who have used... Which video should I...
I think I watched the top one. I didn't watch the second one.
There's some, there's some cool stuff. This is not what it looks like.
Way up.
What it looks like, you're in a... you're in a dark space wearing, let me go ahead here. Here's the Tilt Brush stuff. Traditionally, this is a lot of.
That was the other video, I think.
There we go. Here's some Tilt Brush.
Okay, there we go.
So he's painting. This is what you see. You paint a 3D space. I've also heard that there's a really good 3D design program for Oculus Rift, which is coming out because Oculus is finally releasing its. Is it this one you liked?
Yeah, that's the one I watched.
This is the one-minute teaser.
Woman is doing some stuff.
But this is not what you see in the space. This is kind of a hybrid of what he's seeing and him. But there you go. This is what the space looks like. And a number of our talented staff, very good artists, were able to do some really beautiful Tilt Brush thing. Brian Burnett, Anthony Nielsen did a lot of great things. The thing that's interesting about Tilt Brush is you can walk around your image.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still
inside it.
You're in it, yeah. It's a little ungainly, though. You got to hold this thing.
It's got huge potential, I would think, for design, though, 3D design.
Yeah. I talked to somebody who's used
this
the Oculus.
Really struck me.
Yeah. I've talked to somebody who's used the Oculus tool who says it's a really remarkable way to do 3D modeling. So same idea. We got two different audio tracks going. I apologize on that. You could turn off the audio. But there you go. That's very cool. Tilt Brush. This is a New York Times article on Tilt Brush. But this is something, it's funny that they're kind of doing it now because we've seen this for some time. We were playing with it when we first got our Vive, actually. But I guess they're playing with it in the at an artist-in-residence program at the Smithsonian. Cool. Cool.
Good.
All right. Let's wrap it up. I'll start with Matthew Ingram. You got to pick a tip, something you want to share with our vast viewing audience.
I am still trying to come up with one.
Jeff Jarvis. Jeff, Matthew.
Politics back.
Huh?
I'm not trying to bring politics back, but there's a telethon set for inauguration day. As counter programming with Jane Fonda, Jamie Lee Curtis, Judd Apatow, Patricia Arquette, Christopher Guest, Tim Robbins, and others. What fascinates me about this is that it's going to benefit Planned Parenthood, ACLU, and Earth Justice. What fascinates me about it is it's on Facebook.
Oh, so who needs a broadcast network? Just stream on Facebook.
Exactly. A 23-year-old entrepreneur named Alex Godin, who sold his company Dispatch to Meetup in 2013, assembled the crew of the event. And says, let's have a telethon. Let's play. Hey, Judy. Hey, Mickey. Let's put on a show. And they put it on Facebook. So I found that fascinating.
Interesting. Do you need some more stall time, Matthew?
Actually, the only thing I could think of to mention was that motherboard piece. That was the one thing I wanted to talk about.
We already talked about it. It's fine.
I encourage everybody to read it.
I guess my tip isn't something you can get yet, but there is good news. They have announced that Super Mario Run, which is the massive hit on iOS, will be available for Android. So you can go to the Play Store, search for Super Mario Run, and give them an email address to be notified. But it's my guess that they're getting kind of close because they have announced it. Super Mario Run is a really kind of cool game for phones because you can play it with one hand. It doesn't require all of the motion and movement that traditional Mario games require. But it's quite engaging. I presume they will do the same thing with this as they do with the Apple version, which is give you 3 free levels and then ding you for $10.
Right.
$10.
I heard a lot of criticism about that. People who were initially excited.
Well, you know, it's worth $10. You can see the game on my screen if you want to show it, Carson. It's worth $10. It's really a lot of fun.
I got a Moto 360. That's what I was going to mention.
A Moto 360?
Yeah. So I'm joining the smartwatch small group of people.
You took your time, and I think the smartwatch is dead now. In fact, Motorola has announced it's not doing any more.
So I picked exactly the right moment, just as the bandwagon was losing its wheels and heading for the cliff. Yeah.
Actually, there is news that there will be an Android Wear 2 coming from Google, an update to their Android Wear soon.
I have to say a bunch of things I like about it. But I haven't, the notification thing, I'm trying to get it to the point where it's useful but not annoying.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll ever get there.
Yeah.
Mine finally broke and I don't even wear a watch now, which is driving me nuts.
Yeah.
I asked somebody, it was like Christmas Day, I said, if you have any tips, and someone said, wait, I'll have to get it out of the drawer where I put it like a year ago, and I haven't thought about it since.
Am I guessing this was a gift, Matthew?
Yeah.
Hard to buy for?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm having fun with it.
I love my Moto 360. I have a metal bracelet. It's a very handsome watch.
Yeah, and it does a lot of things that are super useful, but it also does a lot of things that are kind of annoying. So I'm trying to find a happy medium between those two things.
Well, relevant to that, the first Android Wear 2.0 watches were announced at CES this week, including one from Casio. Oh. So somebody is going to continue to make these. This is the WSD F20, follow-up to their F10.
That's pretty ugly.
And I'm not sure what's new in Android Wear 2.0. It's been out, I think, in beta for a while. So I'm sure some people do. But this is apparently one of the first watches that will ship. It is, you know, it's ugly. It's for the sporty set.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I used that made the biggest impression was we were taking pictures at Christmas, you know, family photos and stuff.
And you can stand away from the camera.
Yeah, set the phone up and took the picture with the watch.
Yeah.
So, quickly a question. Some people are announcing phones at CES.
Yes.
Why are they doing that versus Mobile World? Just because to stand out?
It must be timing. You know, it's also true that most of the time PCs are not announced at CES. They're announced later in the year. What is the name of the Taiwan computer show? There's a big computer show in Taiwan in the summer, I think. But there are nevertheless been a lot of PCs announced this week. So I don't know. It might be a renaissance of CES, which has gone through some bad times. You know, for a while it was an iPhone.
That's interesting. Yeah, I know people are going to it more. It's cooler now.
It's cooler now. And there are a lot of new technologies, most unproven, but there are a lot of new technologies like, you know, smart watches and VR and AR and smart
automation.
Cars.
Yeah. Walking home automation. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going personally?
No, we sent Father Robert down there. He's going to be giving us our coverage. He's actually down there right now with Brian Burnett. They're going to do some specials for us. I feel like it's such a zoo. I could get all the information from press releases and other people covering it. So
yeah,
it's a little more manageable that way.
Does Father Robert like it?
Yeah, I'm sure he does. I like it. It's fun to go. It's a scene.
Yeah.
So like any scene, it's fascinating. But if you've been more than 20 times,
yeah,
you kind of it's a little like, old. Yeah, I've seen this scene. Although I have to say, this is one. This looks like one of the most Computex. Thank you. That's the Taiwan show. This is one of the most interesting CESs in a while, and I think partly because of all these interesting technologies that are.
Wasn't it CES way back in the day that had a video part of it and included like a, there was a porn video part of it?
That that was Comdex. CES has been around for a long time, but Vegas also had Comdex, which was a computer show. And Comdex had a, just like the old, remember the old VHS video stores where you'd go, there'd be a curtain and you'd go in the back room and they had the adult tapes back there. They had a special section for adults. Finally, they said, this is not working for us. They separated it out to something called Adult Dex.
Ha!
Which used to be concurrent with Comdex and then for a while was concurrent with CES. But I think that even CES wanted more distance, even more distance. And so I think it's moved. If it's still even around, I don't know.
It still exists.
I remember Comdex isn't around.
It was funny to see. I came by once and the autograph line.
Oh, yeah. Hilarious. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
We went to cover CES for Tech TV, you know, many moons ago. And foolishly, my producer said, hey, we got a camera crew. Let's go across the street to Adult Dex. And I should have just said no.
There's tape somewhere.
Cameras are rolling. And I walk in the door and this woman, Leo! And she's she's apparently a cam girl who is a huge fan of Tech TV. Because actually, if you think about it, in the early days, people who were using the internet for porn were Tech TV fans. So she tries to get me to sit in her lap, and I'm like, I feel like, you know, Anderson Cooper with Kathy Griffin. Like, I'm just very uncomfortable because I know there's cameras rolling, and I just probably not a good idea for me to sit
don't know
in
what
lap.
To do.
So I'm just like,
where do you put your hands?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hi. Yeah. How are you? So that was a bad idea. I think, my friends, we on that note.
Yep. It'd all be leave best it to me to bring it down into the gutter.
Just go home. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. We do This Week in Google, and I know sometimes it sounds like it's about politics, but it's really about the nexus of technology and life, which these days is a lot about politics and journalism. And I think it's meet that we should cover these subjects, especially since you have such great people as Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York, blogger at Buzz Machine, prolific author, and deep thinker, more importantly. Right? Another deep thinker from Fortune magazine. It is, well, fortune.com. as well.
Mm-hmm. No,
we downplay the magazine part these days. Matthew Ingram, you follow him on Twitter at MATHEWI. Always a pleasure, Matthew. Thanks for joining
us. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, we love it. Stacy will be back next
week.
Good
to see you.
Laden with IoT gadgets.
And I sadly will not be here.
Oh, man. It's hard to get the whole gang together these days.
It is. It's horrible.
Yeah. Where are you going?
Frankfurt, and the flight back is landing too late.
No problem. No.
So
it's the way it is. We'll get somebody in your stead.
And then I'll do the next week. I'll do Davos.
Ah, I always enjoy your Davos shows.
Yes.
It's always fun. You are back on you're back to your old traveling ways
for this month.
Okay.
Then it kind of dries up. So I'll be around. Then you're stuck with me.
Ah, as I love it.
You could do it from the plane. In-flight Wi-Fi is so reliable.
We flew United back east. I paid $20 for the in-flight Wi-Fi, and it failed halfway through. That's that.
Yep.
No refund.
Yep. Nope.
But really, as Louis C.K. is wont to point out, we really shouldn't be complaining about the fact that we are connected to the internet on a piece of metal hurtling through the sky, 6 miles high at 600 miles an hour.
True.
That is perhaps the height of
privilege.
First world problems. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We do Twig every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Join us live in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Watch the live stream on twit.tv. We are now live on YouTube, by the way, youtube.com/twit. That's a great place to go for all of our shows. You can watch the live stream at any time. And then there's links on the right there to our on-demand shows, which are all on YouTube, as well as available for download at our website, twit.tv, and, of course, any podcast app that you should choose. You can also subscribe and get every episode. Very pleased, though, to be able to stream now on YouTube Live. So I hope you take advantage of that. If you have an Apple TV, there's 5 or 6 apps available there. Roku, lots of ways to watch. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.